Good morning, we're learning Shmuel Beis. We are now starting a new parak. We're up to parak Yud Tes, which is on our packet. Normally I double side them, but I was trying to figure out the fancy new copying machine upstairs, which sometimes when it's fancy and new, it's a little too hard to understand how these gadgets work. So anyway, you can bear with me. So, we left off in the previous parak when David remained behind and Avshalom did not leave, did not remain behind. He did fight in the war. Unfortunately for him, he was killed. He died. And you would think that that's great news. And in fact, Achimatz, as well as another person, which we don't have a name, but he was called Akushi, that they both ran to give over this news to David. And Achimatz, as we mentioned, went second, but he was such a fast runner, he was able to overtake the Kushi, and he ended up presenting the information that the David's army was victorious. And then David said, "So what happened to my kid? What happened to my son?" And he kind of didn't give a very clear answer. And then when the Kushi came afterwards, he basically said over similar information, but in a much more direct manner, which could have been very shocking to David to have heard such tragic news. Which we concluded by saying that how unbelievable this relationship is of a parent to a child, is that even the child who wished to do harm to the father doesn't make a difference. The relationship that a parent has, even a child who rebels, that connection that parent still has, it's always there. And that's the connection to Hashem, who is our Av, is our parent. No matter how far we stray, we also have the capacity to do tshuva, and Hashem wants us to come back. He longs for us to always have a relationship with Him. So let's begin the parak to see how David now reacts upon hearing this news. This wonderful news that he finally no longer has to run. He can now be acknowledged as the king. No one's going to threaten to take over his position. V'yirgaz ha-melech. V'yirgaz, as is translated in the Masudah Sion, v'yechara, that he had a fear or trembled. The king was obviously very moved and emotional about having heard that his son died. V'yal al-alias ha-sha'ar v'yevch. So he went up to this upper part of this gate, v'yevch, and he cried. And what did he say? What did he cry? V'chol Omar, this is what he said, belechto, in his going. B'ni Avshalom, b'ni, my son, that's one. Avshalom, his son, his name, the second time. B'ni, and then b'ni Avshalom, which is the fourth and fifth time. He keeps talking and crying, wailing over the fact that his son is no longer. Mi'itin musi ani tachtecha. Would it not have been better that after all, I should have died instead of my son? It would have been better. I wish that I was not the one that's alive to have to go against this normal chain of having a parent see their child die. Avshalom, b'ni, b'ni. A sixth time, a seventh time, and an eighth time. Keeps mentioning over and over and again. And, of course, there's no coincidence why it's that amount of times, as we'll see in Rashi in a moment. But before we look in the Radak points out the place that he went to. Aliyas Hashar. Bashar Ha'ir Hoya. Aliyah al-Hashar. So this is saying that it was deliberate, the place that he went, to this upper area. This was like almost like a watching tower where people would be able to see, and they would always go up to the very highest place. But perhaps one of the reasons why he went there was not to look to see who else was coming, but rather to seclude himself. If we look on page 329 in the English, it says, which is underlined, that David went to mourn in private. Perhaps he understood that the rest of the people who had been in mortal combat with Avshalom's forces could hardly be expected to share his grief at the pretender's death. To have Avshalom, who was the enemy, and I was just fighting a war, and I risked my life to fight against Avshalom and his army. So now Avshalom dies. I'm not going to mourn over him. Why would I mourn over him? I just fought him. But David did mourn, and he did so in a private manner. And again, what this is saying is because he was alone in this matter. No one was going to want to mourn with him. It's not something which anyone else would really care about whatsoever. And in fact, it's brought down, not in our packets, but in the Mishnah Tzot Zahav, he says as follows. Nira Shadavid Hikbid Sholichos Lifnei HaNashim. The reason why he went into this private chamber is because he was particular not to cry in front of others. She'ein zekvodo shel melech lilchos lifnei hanashim. It's not the proper way for a king who's supposed to represent strength and power to break down and bawl out crying in front of his entire nation that looks up to him for strength and inspiration. Ulchei nemar, that's the reason why it says v'alias hashar v'yevche, that he waited to start crying. You can see the control over his emotions. That he didn't just start crying, which is the natural reaction. Once you hear terrible news, you can't help it. You cry. It's nothing which, you know, you can't fight the tears. But he was able to, because he had complete control over his emotions, and he was able to somehow wait until he was in private to cry. V'lifnei ha'nashim haya rak medaber ve'omer behilachto, k'mo shemar v'ko omer behilachto. It says that later on, when he encountered others, he wasn't crying, he was speaking. So we see the greatness of David, of his ability to not cry, because that's the way that some people who are of positions of power, they should try to avoid themselves from crying. And this is how my Rosh Hashiva, Rabbi Zweig, explains in Parshas Chayisar. We find in Parshas Chayisar a very unusual letter. In Parshas Chayisar we find the tragic death of one of the greatest women who ever walked the face of this earth, Sari Menu. And what it says that when Sarah died, Avraham cried. He cried for her. He mourned for her. He eulogized her. But when it says the word v'lichosa in the Torah, there is one letter which is small, the chaf. Right? There's a small chaf. And this is pointed out by the Baal HaTurim and others. And they said, why is the chaf written small? Is that it teaches us that since one of the letters in the word cry is written small, means that he didn't cry so much. That's what it says, he didn't cry so much. The question, why did Avram cry so much? He didn't love Sarah, he must have loved her. So what does it mean he didn't cry so much? So Marashiv explains, basically, as we find over here by David, that David was someone who realized that in a position of power, to just break down and to cry is not something which a person should do. And a person does this, you lose on one level, the honor that you deserve, that you, the fear and trepidation that people should have for you. But Marashim explained a further level. He said that when it came to the death of Sarah, it wasn't just a personal loss, it was a communal loss. That's how he explains it. And for Avraham to cry, it would take away from the communal loss, and it would downgrade it to just a personal loss. By him not crying, showed the seriousness for everyone, and it's not just me. It's not all about me. It's about everyone else. And he compared this, and whether you can say this is a quantum leap, that when JFK was shot, so all the media talks about something very unusual about the reaction of JFK's wife. That what did she do? It's known that she did not shed a tear. Right? Am I wrong about this? I wasn't there at the time.
She was very controlled.
She was able to somehow, right. And apparently the media, which I didn't read about, apparently the media felt that this was an admirable thing, that she was able to control herself and she was able to keep her posture and everything, composure. And that's the perhaps the same idea over here, because she was in a position of power and respect, so she minimized the tears. Some people say because she really didn't like the guy so much. I don't know, whatever. But that's, at least at the time, that's people thought a different reason. Anyway, so that answers that one part of this pasuk, which discusses the reason why he chose that place. But we still need to understand why on earth does he keep saying it over and over, eight times, so many times. So if you look in the Radak, still in the Radak, the next Radak says, B'ni V'ni. So the Radak says, Kein derech anohim lichvol divrehem. When a person is crying and mourning, a person doesn't think and they're not calculated with their words. I don't have to think, oh, I'm being redundant over here. When a person lets their emotions flow, it doesn't matter what comes out. They just say what they say, and sometimes they'll end up repeating themselves and saying over and over, and they just keep saying the same sentence, whatever it may be. You can think, why me? How could it be this? How could it be? Oh, my son. So it's natural, and you can't say, oh, how could the Navi have all these extra words? But there's no coincidence that it was specifically 8 times. So we look at Rashi over here. It's very interesting over here. We've heard of that there's 7 heavens, right? The seven heavens. Well, Rashi points out that there's also the, if you go down, there's also that many floors. Rashi says as follows, B'nei V'ni, Shmoyne Pa'amim, 8 times. Now, again, when I counted it in the Pasuk, it doesn't say B'nei 8 times, but it either says the word B'nei, my child, or it says his name. Right, which 8 times. Why did he keep saying his son's name? Om Rabbo Seinu. So the Talmud tells us in Sota Shiva, the Askin Mishiba Midog Gehenna, that when it comes to a person who, God forbid, goes, as the expression says, to hell, which is Gehenna, there are actually 7 different levels of Gehenna. And obviously, it's a spiritual place. People envision it as a physical thing, but nonetheless, there are 7 different levels in which a person can fall down, obviously depending on their conduct in their life. So Avshalom, who did some terrible things, including pursuing to kill his own father, which is a pretty terrible thing after all the things his father did for him, he was all the way in the bottom, the 7th, all the way to the very, very bottom level. So every single time that he said his name and prayed on behalf of his child, he was elevated to a higher level. So then why 8 times? Because the 7 times just gets you out of Gehenna. V'chad di'asal al-madasi. The 8th and final time brought him to Olam Haba. That he was given a chelek, given a portion in the world to come.
The Radak says the same thing.
Yeah, they all bring down this chazal.
Exactly the same thing.
Yeah, because the Radak, Rashi and Radak are basically just quoting a Gemara, right? And you're right, the Mesudas David also quotes the same Gemara. Yeah, you're right, because it's just very striking that it's so many times. And this is what the Gemara points out. Now, there is a Gemara in Sanhedrin that says, I'm just going to tell you what the one sentence, Brah mazaki abba, abba lo mazaki brah. However we understand this, just to translate the words, a child can provide a merit for their parents, but an abba lo mazaki brah, a father or parent cannot cause merit for the child. And the Talmud says, for example, Abraham was unable to save Yishmael, Yitzchak was not able to save Esav. So the idea of also like saying Kaddish, a child saying Kaddish for their parent, is a way for the neshama, for the soul to have an aliyah, to have an elevation in the world to come where they are. So the Talmud says, so how was David effective in this way? Why was it sounds like his tefillah somehow had the capacity, as the Gemara says, to make things better. And furthermore, some say that Avshalom was one of the people that does not have a portion in the world to come. But some say the only reason why Avshalom did not have a portion in the world to come was only because David did not yet pray for him. But once David was mispalel that he should have a chelek in Olam Haba, somehow it has an effect, which is an unbelievable thing. Even though the person has already lived their life, nonetheless, someone else can do this chesed, and somehow it causes a positive effect in the neshama of the deceased. So the question is, how is David able to be effective in his in his Tephilos. So some say, and it's actually brought down over here in the English, on the bottom left on page 329, that David was in a particularly auspicious position to atone for Avshalom's soul, or as noted above, it was his own sin that was at least in part responsible for bringing about Avshalom's death. So the whole mistake, which started off with the taking of Bathsheba and all the things that turned, all the turn of events that occurred because of that, which was as a punishment.
But
so the reality is
the whole situation with Amnon and Tamar.
Right.
That caused Avshalom to go.
Right. Exactly. That's what caused all of this thing. But that whole incident that happened was because of a punishment for what David did originally. But you're right. It's all a series of events that all could point to the source that David made mistakes. David was not 100% the best role model for this child. We can say it that way. And therefore, Avshalom, yes, he made mistakes. You have to be responsible, accountable for your own actions. But David was also to blame. And therefore, because of this, David, even though, let's say, a person, maybe a child, a parent, may not have the capacity to have this effect of change in a child, but in this situation, it was David's mistake originally. And therefore, that's the reason why there was an exception. It's also brought down. Avshalom, kivan shenatos onshav eschel v'om haba. He was given a portion of what to come. Why? Because umeis b'misa mishuna. We learned in a very dramatic fashion how he was killed in a very unusual way. He was dangling from the tree by his hair, and how they took staves and they stuck him. It was just very unusual in the number, and we said this was done as a way for him to receive a kapara. We said that he saw underneath him the Gehenna. He saw Gehenna. And the question was, if he's really a soldier, he was in war, probably had a sword, maybe had a little switchblade, he had something, he could have cut his hair and ran off. But some say that he realized that if he did not allow himself to be killed, then he would never have had a kapara, would never have had an atonement. So the truth is that even though David was davening on his behalf, it was really also together with this unusual death, which death and punishment, the Torah looks upon it as an atonement, as a kapara, and therefore, together with his father's tefillos, it was effective. So that's how some of the Mefarshim explain how this tefillah had the capacity to change, how to make things better. Now, one last thing before we eventually get to the next pasuk. It's interesting how he keeps saying, B'ni, B'ni, B'ni. We mentioned before that David already knew through a prophet, through a nevuah, that he was going to end up being, someone's going to rebel against him. And we mentioned that there is a paragraph, a capital in Tehillim, that it says, Mizmor l'David b'vrachnom b'nei Avshalom b'no. Says that I'm so happy, a mizmor, I'm going to sing a zemer because I'm running away because my son wishes to kill me. So the Gemara in Brachos says, well, what do you mean? Why is it a mizmor? Right? Why is that something he'd be singing? Kinnam boyle, he should be lamenting over the fact that his child is chasing after him. So the Talmud said, which we talked about like maybe a couple months ago, that the Talmud said that he knew 100% someone was going to kill him. Someone was going to pursue him, to hurt him, or try to overthrow him. But he said, Shema Mamzer, Shema Eved, it could be some terrible person, some corrupt person who was just rotten to and through. But then once he heard that it was his son, he said, you know what? My son is going to have compassion. My son will have Rachmanus. And therefore, that's the reason why he's saying a mizmor, because he realized, it's my child. And even though he said, well, what compassion do we really find? Doesn't look like Avshalom showed any Rachmanis on his father. So as we explained, it wasn't really Avshalom. It was Achitofel, who was the person who was really pulling the strings that was trying to get Avshalom to control the entire Jewish world. The reality is Avshalom would have been content with Hebron, as we said. One little community, or not such a little community, but not Yerushalayim. That's my father's position. So my father, you know, it's my father's in Yerushalayim, and I get this tiny little part over here. So the reality is that it was something in which was better that it was a son, and that it was not a terrible person who was not related to him. And that's how the Mefarshim explain why he keeps saying, B'ni, 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 he keeps mentioning, it's my child, to show that he did act as a child. He really did love me, and I loved him. Unfortunately, there was this person that was trying to, that influenced him, that gave him this corrupt way of thinking, and that's the reason why he ended up rebelling. But the truth is, B'ni, B'ni, not only do I have a relationship with him, he always remembered that I was his father and I had a relationship with him, and it was mutual. All right, let's see the next pasuk, pasuk beis. So, you can imagine, upon seeing David crying, or hearing that maybe he was locking himself in a room, which means he's upset about something, and you just fought a war, you may not be extremely thrilled about all this business. But you got to Yoav, and it was told over to Yoav, who was involved and in charge of this army of David. He said, you know, Hineh Melech Bocha, right now this king, he's crying. He's Abel al Avshalom. He's mourning over the loss of Avshalom. Avshalom wanted to kill him. So what ended up happening that on this day, a day in which there was Teshuah, in which there was people were saved, there was salvation, it turned into mourning for the entire people, even though people were so excited that they won this huge war. How am I supposed to celebrate it when the king himself is somehow, some reason, upset? Kishama ha'am, because people heard Bayamahu Lemor, Netzav ha'melech al b'no, that he's so sad and he's so upset and devastated over the loss of his child. So people obviously didn't know how to react over this strange behavior. And before we move on to the next pasuk Dalet, we find in the English over here on the bottom, which I underlined, that David's behavior was contrary to the behavior of Aaron, which we just learned, which just read a week before in Parsha Shmini, the tragic death of two of his four sons, Nadav and Avihu. And it says, V'yidom Aaron. He was silent. He was somehow able to accept that which happened. Obviously, it was very difficult and tragic and painful for him, but he didn't make a whole big thing about it. But yet, when it comes to David, we see him reacting in a way which is quite different than that of Aaron. And it brings down over here that perhaps the difference is that Aaron, it was at least easier because 100% God did it. There was this fire that came. They died in the process of the service. There was no one around, no swords, no one shot them. They died because God struck them down, and they died in this way. So for Aaron to be silent, okay, it's understandable. At least he can realize they must have made a mistake because God punished them. But when it came to David was murdered. Was murdered by the hand of man, as it says. And therefore, it's much more difficult when you do not see the hand of God in the punishment, and when someone is harmed, or certainly when something happens to one's child, and you don't see God's involvement, and it's certainly much, much more difficult for one to be able to understand, and to be able to have acceptable answers, and to just be silent. It's hard to be silent. And even David was not silent. So certainly when tragedies occur to us, and for us not to be able to see the hand of God is usual, because God does things in a concealed manner, how responsible should we be if we react in that way, if David reacts this way? Pasuk Dal. V'is ganev ha'am v'yom ahu lavo ha'ir. Very interesting language. It says that the nation stole on that day to come into the city. It's translated over here in the English that they, well, the people stole themselves. Which interesting language. We'll see what that means in a second. Kasher yisganev ha'am ha'nechlamim benusam b'mochama. Just as one would steal themselves in the same way, or it says they would be ashamed, would steal away when they run from the battle. So if you look in the Mesudas David, what exactly is Bisganev? Lo ba lo'ir biyad ramah uvesimcha kederach amenatz. Usually when you win a war, there's parades and there's excitement and there's much merriment. But this did not happen whatsoever in this case. Ki'im behester kaganav. It was done in a hidden manner like a ganav, like a crook, a thief. Kederach bias hanosim min ha'melchama. And just like a person who would flee from war, which means that they were not successful, and they just kind of quietly go into their homes because we didn't win, that's how they behaved, even though they were victorious. So it was a language of Geneva. So the sidebar, the Torah sometimes mentions Geneva, sometimes it mentions another Hebrew word which sounds synonymous with Gazela. They're both forms of stealing. Gazela is when a person steals publicly, like for example at gunpoint, or if I rip something out of your hands, that's considered to be gazela. And in fact, and when it comes to ganeva, which is the correct term over here, is ganev, is when a person does so in a quiet behester, right? And just so you should know, there's halachic differences. If a person steals publicly, if I grab it out of your hands, in that situation, I only have to pay back the keren, the principal, just the object. When a person is a ganav, a person steals in a hidden manner, you have to pay what's called kefel, double the amount, which there's much discussion.
It's four times.
It's four. If afterwards you would take the animal and slaughter it or sell it, then there's additional penalties as well. But yeah, so that's the idea of Yisganev, which just is a complete sidebar. Obviously, the Torah looks at a person who does things privately worse than a person does it out in the open. At least a person does things out in the open. I'm a crook. I'm an honest thief. Right, exactly. I'm a ganev, so I'm a big tzaddik over here, and behind your back, I'll steal your wallet. So that the Torah considers to be worse. We'd rather you be an honest crook than to be a hypocrite. So anyway, but that's what happened over here. They just didn't react in a normal fashion. You can imagine how upset you would be if this is how you had to react. What choice do you have? You can't act thrilled when the king himself is devastated and upset. And when the king is devastated and upset and is emotional, who knows how he's going to react? And then I'm not going to start acting happy around him. Could end up, I may end up not being walking around so well. I may not live to see another day. Pasukei. Okay. So Vahamelech Laat as Panav. Laat is translated Mr. Sion as Atav Vakisa, that he covered up his face. The Yizak Hamelech Kol Gadol. Now he really loses control and he starts crying loud, bitter tears. B'ni Avshalom, Avshalom B'ni B'ni. I didn't see anyone who says this, but it's interesting now. It goes to five, right? Obviously, the connection of the eight, he doesn't have to do. Assuming that we would accept the Chazal, that he has been elevated, so he no longer has to be elevated out of Gehenna in these seven steps, so he doesn't need the eight anymore. But he cries now a series of five times. And of course, one could do additional research or think about the order. Why does it say B'nei Avshalom, Avshalom B'nei B'nei? What exactly does that mean? Why is it done that in that particular way? But nonetheless, he continued crying and crying, and the reactions, you can imagine, are not good. And because of this, Yoav needs to rebuke. He says, this is ridiculous already. This is crazy. V'yavo Yoav el HaMelech, El Hamelech Habayis. So Yoav went to the king, went to David, in this home, this chamber, hidden. Who cares it's hidden? He's screaming. Everyone knows what he's doing. Everyone's talking about it. And it's not good. V'yomar, he said, You should know that you have humiliated the faces of all of your servants. Those people that saved you today. As well as you're humiliating your children, which could also mean not that you're humiliating them. It could also mean that we saved not just your life, we saved your whole family's life. We saved your kids and your wife, your wives, concubines, and everyone's listening to this, and you're humiliating them. You're making them feel disgusting and terrible that you're so upset. And this is the perception. La'ahava esanecha, felisno es ohavecha. By you showing clearly, openly, with words, with crying, with grief, that you love those that who hate you, felisno es ohavecha. You are really saying that you hate those that love you, because you're acting that Avshalom hates you. And you're showing, I love him so much. So it's almost like you're siding with the enemy. So now the point is that those people that were fighting against Avshalom and his army, so now it shows that you're turning your back against those very people who protected you and saved your life from these people that hated you. We'll explain that a little bit better in the Mesudas David. Why? Ki higadata hayom ki ein locha sarim ba'avadim. For it's like you're making this statement. You said today that you do not have any servants. Ki yadati hayom, ki lu Avshalom chai. Because if it would be that Avshalom would be alive, v'kulanu hayom meisin, and perhaps all of us would be dead. Ki oz yashim enachit, and that would be a good thing, right? Because Avshalom, if he would win, he would go right after you, and he would kill you. He'd kill your entire family, and we wipe out your entire army. So is that what you would want? Is that what is better? But that's what you're doing. You're almost acknowledging that you're upset that Avshalom died and that your army won. But if your army didn't win, he would come right after you. He would kill you. So why are you so happy about all this? Now it's interesting, as we often try to point out, that sometimes there's a Karinic Siv. Sometimes there's a pasuk that's written in a different way, with different letters, than that which is actually said. So the Mishnah Tzav Zahav points out when it says Kilu Avshalom Chai, if it were that Avshalom was still alive, which means he is alive. If it were that he was alive, then all of us would have been dead. But why does it say Kilo? Lo, not with a vav, with an av, means Kilo Avshalom Chai. It says Kilo Avshalom Chai means that Avshalom was never alive. Why was he never alive? Because the Talmud says that Rishayim afilu b'chayehim nikra meitim, that if you have a wicked person who's corrupt and terrible, who has nothing positive to contribute in this world, even though they're physically breathing the air and walking about this earth, they're considered to be dead. And therefore, that's how Mishnah Tzav Zahav says that this is what he was alluding to by saying, ki lo Avshalom chai, you're mourning over his death. What are you mourning over his death? Even when he's alive, he was nothing. He had nothing positive to contribute. And now that if he would have been alive, and he would have been victorious in this war, then what would have happened? Everyone else would have died. And is that what you want? Az yoshem einecha. That's what you want. That's what would have been good in your eyes. Now the question is, yes, he mourned over his son who died. I understand that. But where does it say ki higadata hayom? Where do we find in his tears and his wailing, which all he said was Avshalom, he said Bani, my child, that's all he said, kept mentioning his son's name, where do we find that you are saying, you're speaking today, that you have no sarim and avadim, you have no officers or servants? Where's the Haggadah, which is, that's the term of that book on Pesach, is a Haggadah. Where is this being told over? Where is this information being told over? So if you look in the Mesudas David, says, Ratzalomar, Ba'aluchazeh, by you mourning in this fashion, ki'ilu tagid she'en l'chasar ba'amodim. It is as though you are saying, you didn't actually say it, but you're basically saying it, that you do not have anyone who serves you and does your bidding. That these people are considered worthless in your eyes. This is kind of what we talked about on Shabbos when it came to the two birds of the Metzorah that, according to some Mepharshim, including the Zohar, they said one bird represents the Lashon Hara, the evil speech, and the other bird, which is part of the purification process, is brought because of good speech. So some of the Mepharshim learn, some explain that, well, why do you have to bring a sacrifice for good speech? It's perhaps the lack of the good speech. It's not always the bad things that you say, sometimes it's the omission of the things that you're supposed to say. And over here, by David doing nothing but crying over the loss of his son, and not acknowledging and not speaking about how proud he is of his army, defending his own life, protecting his own family, it's as though he said, I'm not appreciative of that which you do. It's the power of words and how perception creates reality, which is found over here. Okay, let's move on with the next pasuk. V'ata kum, now get up. He doesn't say please. You got to do this. I'm telling you, this is some. You don't really have a choice in the matter. Get up, say go. V'davra alev avodecha, and speak to the hearts of your servants. What does it mean? Speak to their hearts. You speak to their ears, speak to their minds. So Golem Siddhas David, Ratzalomar, Devarim Tovim Hamikubolim Al Halev, Bavor Tzachon HaMelchama. Speak to their hearts, speak to their emotions. They're an emotional wreck right now because of your reaction, your bizarre behavior. Speak to them, let them know that you really do appreciate all that they do for you, that they are willing to listen and do everything that they're asked to do. Why is it important? I'll tell you why. I normally wouldn't do this, but I would actually make an oath and swear in the name of God. That if you do not leave right now, if you decide to tarry and just ignore this and to brush on the carpet, you think there'll even be a certain, even a guy that will stand by your side tonight? I heard your whole life story, all your sob stories, with Shaul trying to kill you, and now I know all about a Shaul, but I'll tell you that if you do not do something about this right now, if you somehow do not do this damage control, if you will, then it will be the worst situation, worse than anything you've ever experienced, because the people that were your strongest supporters, that were willing to risk their lives, are now going to turn their backs to you, and you will not only be left alone, they are going to think, what type of a person is this? And they may overthrow you. And therefore, you better do something. And in fact, that's precisely what he does, which we'll see this last passage. So the king, David, never mentions his name. He stands up by the gate, and he says to the nation, Hini HaMelech Yoshev Bashar, I am sitting by the gate, which means I am now here, and I want to participate in your lives. I want you to feel comfortable to come to me, and I'm recognizing your existence. V'yavukol am lifnei hamelech. So the entire nation got up. V'Yisrael nas ish lo halav. And some members of the Jewish people fled to their tents. What does that mean? They fled to their tents. Sounds like they did something wrong. So Rashi says, osim shahayu im avshalom. Right now. Which is interesting. Until David did this, David was crying and wailing. They were in the mix of it all. And maybe those people were saying, this guy's nuts. Okay, Avshalom's dead, but what do we need this David character for? So they were perhaps trying to influence and persuade all these people to try to overthrow David. Because after all, they turned against him. They were fighting with Avshalom. So now that Avshalom died, doesn't mean they're going to immediately side with David. But now that David goes down and shows that I do care and I do respect and I appreciate everything that you did for me by fighting, now he gets the loyalty of those people, his servants, and those other people, those small, those few, the weak, those people ran back to their homes. And as we're going to see in the next few sentences next week, numerous people come out of the woodwork, people that were very disrespectful to David, and they ask for forgiveness, and ultimately we'll have to see how David reacts to all these people.